Hey, here's a fun thing to do if you're ever really bored like I am all the time. You get up, you get out of bed, you put some clothes on, you go out, and you go to a dollar store near you. They're all over the place. You know the dollar store. Everything in the store is a dollar. You walk in, and by the way, wear your shabbiest clothes. Otherwise, you'll look like you don't belong. Pajama pants usually works very well. So you walk into the store, you walk down the aisle, you pick up an item off the shelf, and you walk up to one of the register people, and you say, hey, how much is this? They'll look at you for a while, and then they'll say, it's a dollar, everything in the store is a dollar. And then you walk away, and about a minute later, you grab another item off the shelf, you walk up to the register, and you say, excuse me, And how much is this?
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird. If you like that sort of thing.
I do like that sort of thing.
Whatever. Mm-hmm.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show, he said with jubilation in his voice.
Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you, Julie. Welcome to the program. I hope I've gotten your attention. Just in case I haven't, I'm going to hold up a cute little puppy dog.
Aww.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that a cute little puppy dog? Look at, how can you not be enchanted by the cute puppy dog? Look at the saliva dripping out of its mouth and the cute little saliva. And look at that little crusty stuff in the corner of the eye of the puppy dog. That's a cute dog. And look at the little turd that the dog has laid on your carpet. Isn't that the cutest little turd?
Aww.
All right. Anyway, hi. I'll never forget watching a show called People's Court, but the original one, way back before some of you were even born. Can you imagine that there was a time when you weren't born yet? There was. And I think I was around before you were born, some of you. Others, not. Others, it's the other way around. Anyway, I remember watching the People's Court, and the original judge was Judge Wapner. He was like Walter Cronkite. He was like everybody's dad. He was stern, yet loving, and just had that enchanting, trustworthy face. You know what I'm talking about?
Aww.
Yeah, the kind of face with little crust coming out of the corner of his eye.
Aww.
All right, that's enough. So I'm watching Judge Wapner on People's Court, and the ligaments, the two people there were. It was about a dog that bit another dog, and the plaintiff was suing the defendant because their dog got bitten and had to go to the hospital and get stitches, and the dog eventually, because of the injuries inflicted by the other dog, that dog unfortunately passed away.
Aww.
And the plaintiff was just beside herself. She just, and I, you know, I've had dogs all my life. I quite understand. I mean, dogs are sometimes closer to us than people are, because I don't know many people that will sit in my lap and lick my face. Not many people will do that. As a matter of fact, I don't know any human being that will sit in my lap and lick my face. I wouldn't even sit in my own lap and lick my own face, much less expect somebody else to. But yet a dog will do that. So, we have great affection for our dogs with the unconditional love. So I'm watching the Judge Wapner thing on People's Court, and the judge says, I want to tell you something, plaintiff. I know you're very upset about your dog passing away and because of the other dog biting your dog. But in the eyes of the law, dogs are property. They are not living things. Wapner, the god of judges, you've said something that has really offended me. In the eyes of the law, now not in the eyes of society now, but in the eyes of the law, a dog is nothing but property. Oh my God. So in other words, if your dog dies, all we can do is give you the replacement cost. Oh no. And that doesn't mean you can get a new dog. You have to replace it with another dog. At the time the dog was bitten, when it was 14 years old, when the dog was bitten, we will pay for the replacement of that dog at a 14-year-old value. What is this, auto insurance? What the hell are we doing here? But that's in the eyes of the law. In the eyes. The droopy little eyes of the law.
Aww.
It's horrible. That marred me for my whole life. I was a child when I watched that Wapner thing, and it scarred me for life. I thought, our country and our humanity was quite more advanced than considering a living thing a piece of property. Although, to be very politically correct about it, there was a time in our history when we did consider living human beings to be nothing but property. You remember that, don't you? Let's not go there. Ladies and gentlemen, I have one question for you, and one question only.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today?
Mm-hmm. Well, what is it? I have seen the resurgence of the white pants phenomenon. That's right. Around this time of year, it becomes okay, after Memorial Day, it is okay to wear white pants. There is an unwritten rule in the eyes of the law, once again. There's an unwritten rule that you never, ever, ever wear white pants in public before Memorial Day, and you never, ever, ever, ever wear white pants after Labor Day. If you don't know that, you don't know Jack. And guess what? I have no friends named Jack. So, it's true, I really don't. I don't think I know anybody named Jack. I never refer to anybody by the name of Jack. I never say, hey, Jack. I don't think I've ever said that. Actually, I knew one Jack. He was a DJ. Nice guy. But that was it. We weren't really close friends. I just knew that his name was Jack. Oof. And of course, the old joke, you know, if you did know somebody named Jack and you saw him walking down the street, you would yell at him, hi, Jack, and then they would arrest you. Do you get it? Do you get the joke there? Probably not. Anyway, so the white pants, I spotted my first walking pair of white pants yesterday. It was on a guy, on a man. Can you believe that? First of all, men should never, ever, 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 never, ever, 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 ever wear white pants. Ever, ever, ever. Unless you're in the Navy and it's part of the uniform. But even then, don't do it. White pants on a man is just stupid. The other people that wear white pants when they're men are golfers. That's not right. You should be wearing banana-colored pants. You should be wearing yellow or red pants to look buffoonish, not white. And if you play tennis, sometimes you think, well, then I can wear white shorts. You can't. That's stupid. You look like you're wearing your underpants out in public. It's stupid. Men should never, ever, 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 never, ever, 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 ever wear white pants. Ever. That's my rule. Forget this. Screw this Labor Day and Memorial Day bit. Never wear white pants. Now, flip side. Women, you can wear white pants whenever you want. You can do anything whenever you want anyway. You could even wear corduroy and get away with it. Sure, you would start some small fires if you were a little thigh heavy, but you could actually get away with wearing corduroy. Yeah. Women can actually wear turtlenecks. Men? No, you can't. I don't know if you've read the latest rule book, but you can't wear a turtleneck. It's just dorky, stupid. We have a lot of restrictions on ourselves, men. We really, really do. But it doesn't really matter because men don't care how they look. When men dress up, it's very simple. They put on a suit jacket, or what they call a sport jacket. It's a tailored jacket with a shirt and a tie. Then you are set up for a business meeting. You can go to a wedding. You can do anything if you have that ensemble, and that's all you're expected to wear when you're in public in a fancy situation. That's all you're expected to wear. A woman, there is no expectation. You are as free as a bird to wear anything you want. You can wear a red dress, a blue dress, a purple dress. You can wear stripes. You can wear anything. You can wear a jacket. You can wear anything you want, and it's perfectly fine with everybody. But not a man. No. The options are less, which makes it easier for a man. And most men need that easy out. Women get complicated. Anything goes. And for most men, if the woman is wearing something skin tight and has a decent body, you're good. Anything goes. No one's going to say a damn word. And again, you can wear white pants to your heart's content. Here's the other thing about women in white pants and men in white pants. Men, when you wear white pants, at some point within 3 to 4 minutes after putting on the white pants, your white pants will be dirty. The pockets will be dirty. Your ass is certainly going to be dirty. There'll be some kind of brownish, blackish, ash-colored thing on your ass because you sat down on a dirty chair or on a couch or something where the color came off a little bit on your white pants, or you're reaching into your pants pocket to get your keys or your wallet and your hands were dirty and you get that little smudge of dirt on your pants. Or on the knee area on the white pants, something, or on the bottom near the shoe. Maybe it dragged on some wet grass or something, and you got a little grass stain. Men within 3 minutes, count the seconds, will have some kind of stain on their pants. Women, never. Pristine, perfectly white, perfectly worn. Without a wrinkle, without a crease, without a stain, without a smudge, nothing. Pure, white elegance. You take those same pants, you put them on a man, it's a dirt fest. Why is that? Ladies and gentlemen, there is no explanation. None whatsoever. Because certain things just are. Because they just are. Because that's just the way it is. Because it's are. Because are, that's all. That's just it. That's are. That's how it are. It's how it is are.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today?
Listening to the Ron Van Dam Show, the podcast world's version of painful itching and swelling. You know they sell a cream for that, right? It's over the counter. Works really well. I've had to use it a lot.
If you're new to the program, hi, this is pretty much it. I talk incessantly for a period of time. Usually toward the end of the show, we have a guest, an interview that we do to inform you to somehow make this all plausible and worth somebody's while. That's pretty much the format here. I have very deep political views, but I don't tend to push them on you because I just think that we need a break from all that crap continually. So I try to put a smile on your face, you know, act like a buffoon, that kind of thing. And you laugh maybe sometimes, or you figure this is very pathetic, but it's fascinating, like a car wreck, you know, whatever the case may be. I really don't care. But I do ask you to follow me. Now I'm over here. I'm over here now. Follow me now. I'm over here. That means join me every single weekday. We do a new show every single weekday. I have for years, and as you probably know, my background, I've been in radio, on broadcast radio, for 25 years. Yeah, I know. What a waste of one's life, huh? I know. I seriously understand where you're coming from. So, do that. You can go to the Facebook page, New England Broadcasting, The Ron Van Dam Show. New England Broadcasting, The Ron Van Dam Show. Serves no purpose whatsoever, but I paid to have the thing put up. So, do that. Follow me there. Or go to Podbean. You can follow me there, The Ron Van Dam Show on Podbean. We're on TuneIn Radio, which also is part of the Alexa thing, the Amazon Alexa. We can also be found on Podbean on the Amazon Alexa as well. You simply say the name of the show into your Alexa Amazon thing and you'll hear the latest episode. We're also on iTunes. We're all over the freaking place. So please make me a habit, if you will, please. I'd appreciate it. I don't ask much. It doesn't cost you anything to listen to this. So let's, you know, do a reciprocal deal here. Just listen sometimes, please. You know, it's not just me that makes this show what it is. I have to blame other people. Jason Shaw does the music. The opening theme, what you're listening to right now, is a Jason Shaw composition. He's with the program. We appreciate that. John Shanahan writes many of the comedy commercials, does our little openings and comedy stuff. John's fantastic. John Shanahan, thank you very much. Nicolette, who's that babe at the beginning of the show, she lended her voice to the program. We appreciate it from her. And there are a couple other people whom I don't really want to mention at this time.
Do you know that there is one item that can not only increase your home's beauty, but its value? That would be placemats. Hello, I'm George Karanapikopoulos, owner of George K's Wholesale Placemat Warehouse, your one-stop for all your placemat needs. We have a placemat for every room of your house. That's right, placemats are not just for the dining room anymore. Anywhere you might make a spill, or maybe where you eat, like in front of the TV, I do it all the time like you. You want a placemat. We have fancy placemats, like in bamboo or teak. That's right, teak. Nice plastic laminate ones for no stains, even blue. We can custom make you placemats in as little as 2 weeks. Come to our showroom at the intersection of Route 27 and the Holbrook Turnpike. You're going to like what you see. Your placemat is waiting for you at George K's Wholesale Placemat Warehouse.
Bob Schmidt joins us now. He's an author and an interesting man. He does a lot of things in the various fields. His newest novel is Natural Born Leader, which is new and it's not new. This is about some guy named Donald Trump, who eventually became president, as I understand it. And this book is kind of an odd, weird look at the whole thing. I understand you actually wrote this book before he was even president.
Yeah, I wrote it during the primaries. There was so much going on in the primaries, lots of inspiration. I had no idea where we would end up today, so I finished the book actually about a year ago. And it was clear at that point he was going to be the Republican candidate. To me, that was wild and wacky enough.
Yeah.
There's been a lot that's happened last year.
Apparently.
I would say that a lot of it has played out just how I would have expected it if he was elected. And I think my book looks at, things that are similar to what he has proposed. I twist them around a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, just taking what the Donald says and creating a fictional character and have that character say the same thing, no fun. But taking stuff that the Donald says and then having a character say something similar,
yes,
that sounds equally as wacky is definitely a lot more fun.
Yes. So rather than a critique, which it may indeed be, it's a novel, a fictional character that is very hard not to assume might reflect this particular guy.
Yeah, it's not very well camouflaged.
Okay. But you use a different name, so I guess that works out. Okay. What is your background, Bob, that you got into something like this?
Totally unrelated. I'm not a political journalist or even a novelist. This is my first published book, at least. I've written some other stuff for fun. I'm a scientist initially, and then right now I work in something called medical device quality assurance and regulatory.
Yeah.
That's as exciting as it sounds. So, this is really a way for me to express my sense of humor, something that in my job I keep pretty well hidden.
Yeah.
In fact, I'd say, I've worked for decades, and I'm not the person that goes into the office and that tells everybody my political opinion.
Right.
In fact, until people I work with read this, they probably had no idea what my politics were.
Interesting. Okay. And I understand that you come from a family, one of your parents is a psychologist.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. So it helps in terms of people and, in terms of satire. A lot of satire is analyzing the way people think and what they do. I've done some articles after the book came out. And one of the articles I did was really take off on the president's analyst, except my article is the president's in need of an analyst. It was after he accused Obama of bugging his campaign, and seemed a little, to some of us seemed a little crazy, a little paranoid, a little delusional. But to understand people, sometimes it's good to try to understand how people think.
Yeah. There was a movie starring Peter Sellers that goes back a little while. It was a movie called Being There. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, definitely. If you were to ask for an influence on, kind of one of the premises in the book,
uh-huh.
I'd, I'm old enough. I saw that movie when it first came out when I was in college.
Uh-huh.
And I would say that my lead character, who isn't the Ronald, if you would picture, you know, maybe a taller, younger Chauncey Gardner running for president, that would be a lot about what the book's about.
Very interesting. Yeah, because that movie was supposed to be a comedy. Now it's not so funny.
Yeah, it's, you know, the idea that people have no idea what they're talking about, that they can get the year of the president, or in my case, somebody can, you know, as I put it, have the intellect of a 7-year-old, but still be a viable presidential candidate. Kind of, you know, it's an extreme case, but it gets that politicians aren't necessarily as bright as we think they are.
No, no, apparently they're not. So the thesis of the book, or part of the book, is indeed about talking about mental disorders in an analytical, humorous way. But this idea that the president is in need of an analyst, that kind of played out, didn't it?
Yeah, the country's still pretty divided. So, you know, a lot of people, there's 40% of people that voted that, you know, apparently it really won't matter what Trump says or does. He's their guy. You got to put up with kind of the background noise, but he's giving that part of the population what they want. But, you know, there's probably somewhere between 50 and 60% of us that are kind of scared.
Well, it's not only, I think that 40%, might be still in comparison to what the alternative might have been, but I think it's down considerably lower than that for those that think that this is okay now. I think that's a pretty low number. Anyway, so tell me a little bit about the novel itself. The main character is called the Ronald, which is very, very similar to what in real life. What happens in the book?
So, the Ronald is actually, I would call him the second main character.
Mm.
The main character is a person named George Jr. Mm. And the premise of the book is there's a Texas Republican senator named Bill Flowers.
Yeah.
He's on his way to becoming the Republican candidate for president. Popular, the polls are saying that he's going to be in.
Mm-hmm.
So Bill's popular, but he's got his issues, and his main issue is that he has an eye for the ladies, and he's, you know, essentially, as he's in Congress, the wife's back in Texas, and he's hitting on every intern and lobbyist that he can get his hands on. Well, it turns out that his current fling is actually a porn star named Lola, and, you know, we talk about the Ronald. The Ronald has aspirations to run, too. He's not happy that Bill's, you know, ahead in the polls. So the Ronald's really behind the plot to take Bill out. Bill drops, and Bill's dad is a senator, too, a retired senator named George Sr. George Sr. has a younger son, George Jr., and he's obsessed with having a son in the White House. He thought it was going to happen. Now it's, you know, kind of falling apart on him.
Mm-hmm.
So he decides, okay, I'm just going to run George Jr. And this is where, you know, he believes that he can make George Jr. a viable candidate, even though George Jr. is essentially the dark secret of the family.
Uh-huh.
So that's really the premise, is how do you run somebody that's really, I mean, they're pretty much legally unfit to even hold a job.
Yeah,
but he's going to run up for president.
I see.
And the way he does it is, first, he's got the best campaign manager.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea is it's not so much the candidate, it's the message, the commercials, all the infrastructure behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing he does is he recruits one of his executives, Martha Wilson, supposes George Jr.'s fake fiance.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a main character in the book, too. They really work it out so that when they go to a campaign stop, Martha goes up and gives a speech. George kind of sits there and agrees with her, and everybody cheers.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole book is about how do you hide the fact that, you know, George Jr. really doesn't know what's going on? So there's other aspects. They create an animatronic George that they call Virtual George.
Wow.
So they shoot this essentially robot to do all the TV commercials and sound bites.
Yes.
And then when he, you know, obviously he has to do debates, he has to give speeches. So 21st century technology, they give him an earpiece and train him to essentially repeat everything he hears.
Wow.
So that's the main plot. But then, you know, he has to run against somebody.
Yeah.
And you've got the Ronald in the background. You know, my version, the Ronald, billionaire real estate tycoon. But, you know, you get the story behind the story. So he also is a pornographer. he imports counterfeit goods from China, you know, all this stuff where, you know, he's essentially corrupt. He's got his own set of secrets, but he makes a strong pitch to the right, and that makes him a viable candidate.
Yeah, and this whole thing is getting
pretty scary. You got these two battling.
Yeah, wow. Can I try some of the drugs that you're on? Only kidding.
you know, mainly just alcohol.
Yeah, it's just like, hey, we're like brothers. are you tempted to write again?
Yeah, no. I kind of wrapped up the book mm-hmm. with an idea that there were going to be a lot of things dangling, mm-hmm. and you know, I'm not going to go through what everything is dangling. That would pretty much spoil it all. But you know, there's an angle in terms of, you know, where is George Jr. going? Where does Ronald end up? There's some. I don't end up with maybe the same scenario that we have today.
Right.
That much I'll say. There are a lot of parallels. I've got a Russia connection with the Ronald before there was a Russian connection in real life. That was almost by accident. The real parallel is the Ronald has two ex-wives and a current wife named Natasha. And one of the things that comes up during the campaign is that not only is Natasha's uncle part of the Russian mafia, but there are questions about, you know, how did she actually get citizenship?
Wow.
And, you know, it was one of the things that was kind of funny as I'm sitting there waiting for the book to come out, mm-hmm. and then even right after it came out, is all this stuff is happening, and it's so close to some of my plot lines, it was kind of killing me.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. I have that angle, and then I think one of the stories ran for a couple of days is questions around Melania's citizenship mm-hmm. path, and I'm like, no, that's my idea. Wow. Don't steal it from reality before the book even comes out.
That's weird when real life is stealing your made-up ideas. It's very freaky.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much crazy stuff going on that you know, you can make up. I mean, short of... Sometimes I call the book political science fiction.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, short of having it be a political race on Pluto, I mean, there's nothing that you could say that could happen in reality that's not crazier than fiction.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's like the book has a life of its own just by things happening. It's kind of odd. Where is the book available?
It's through all the major outlets, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's published by Author House, so that's the primary site, but it's also, you know, pretty much any ebook outlet.
Beautiful. It's called Natural Born Leader, and it's fascinating, satirical, clever. It's got a whole lot of stuff going on for it. And now, how can people follow you? Do you have like a particular Facebook or a website or something?
I am on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I do have a website that at least posts the book information. It's robertschmidtauthor.com.
Great. Perfect. Let me spell your name for those that may not know, and then they're going to go find you. I hope in a pleasant manner, not a stalking sense. It's Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-D-T. And it is robertschmidtauthor.com?
Yes.
And the book.
Yeah, and if you Google Natural Born Leader and right. that name,
it'll come up.
All the book websites.
All
the
stuff comes up. Okay. A pleasure speaking to you. Hope we can do this again in the near future and follow your career and see what's happening with your new writings. Fun speaking to you. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate it. My tagline is "Let's make politics fun again." So, if nothing else, I don't promise you're going to learn political science, but you should laugh.
Okay, well, that's what we need, actually. Okay, thank you so much, Bob.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Thank you, Mr. Robert Schmidt, for that. You're a fine man. Let me just take a moment to praise you. You are very special to me in many, many ways. But the major way is that you listen to this show. And for that, I must get down on my knees and get a little stain that's been in my carpet for about half a year now. I think it's a pee stain from my dog, and it's been bothering me. So I get down on my knees and clean that up. But at the same time, I want to thank you for being a listener of this program. You know, in doing so, you're helping many starving children throughout the world in ways that I can't even realize because there is absolutely no connection whatsoever. But I think somehow they're better off. And I really think that we form a relationship, you and I. It's a perfect relationship for me because I don't have to know who you are or deal with you or listen to you talk. Or hear your ridiculous ideas and assumptions about life. And on your end, I don't know what you're gaining, but I do appreciate our relationship. It's non-sexual, as you know. It must remain that way, no matter how much you think otherwise. This is the kind of relationship that I like. It's like a Facebook relationship. I don't know who you are. You don't really know who I am. And I think that's perfect. It's perfect. It's mutual. We know what to expect from each other. From you, I expect absolutely nothing. And from me, you get absolutely nothing. So, all in all, this is just lovely. This is lovely. Maybe someday we'll both look back on this and say, this was absurd. This was absolutely ridiculous. What was the point of all of this? And if I can put a smile on your face for a split second, then I figure I have done my job and I will go to heaven. Now, I don't know where heaven is because I don't have it on my GPS. It should be a favorite, but I don't have it loaded. But I think that was my purpose in life. When I was born, I remember going through my mother's tubes and emerging into the world. The doctor slapped me in order to get my breathing going and said, this is a baby that's going to end up doing a podcast and doing broadcast radio. This is definitely a radio baby. And I remember my mother saying, you got to be kidding me, shove it back in. This is going to be a horrible disappointment. I swear I heard those words. I swear I did. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace.